The way to get Russia's attention may be money.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Scott Jagow. Earlier this week, the world's richest industrial countries called for increased economic support for the embattled former Soviet state of Georgia. Now, Russia may be seeing the flip side of that coin, so to speak, as foreign investors pull billions of dollars out of Russia in response to its invasion of Georgia. Official figures show the sharpest fall in Russia's foreign currency reserves in a decade. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Russia's central bank says its reserves fell by $16.5 billion in the week following the invasion of Georgia. That's the biggest fall since the debt crisis of 1998. Analysts say the drop reflects the flight of foreign money. Western investors have scrambled to get out of Russian shares and bonds and out of the ruble. Flush with oil revenues, Russia is well placed to weather the storm. Its currency reserves are still at very high levels. But the exit of foreign cash has caused discomfort. Russian companies already find it harder to raise capital. That could crimp the country's growth. NATO and the EU merely warned the Kremlin of adverse consequences. It's the financial markets that are meting out the punishment. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Dow will be starting out from the 11,430 mark after a mixed day on Wall Street. The blue chip index managed to shrug off financial sector worries and actually got something of a lift from a jump in oil prices, which boosted energy stocks and sent the Dow up 0.1%. The broader S&P 500 gained 0.25%, but the Nasdaq finished 0.3% in the red. European exchanges are showing some optimism this morning. London's FTSE is up 1.1%, while Frankfurt's DAX and the Paris CAC 40 are both up around 0.75%. Today wraps up the last official week of the current earnings season. Retailers Ann Taylor and Perry Ellis are among the last trickle of companies to report their profits for the second quarter of the year. As our New York Bureau Chief Amy Scott reports, now analysts are looking ahead.
Overall, corporate profits fell more than 20% in the second quarter. That's according to Al Goldman, chief market strategist at Wachovia Securities. He says if you don't count banks and other financial companies, earnings actually improved a bit.
The financial group has been the number one problem in the market for a year now because of the subprime mortgage debacle and the very, very dramatic write-offs that it has created.
Among the winners in the second quarter, oil and energy companies naturally profited from high prices. Goldman says technology firms cashed in on sales overseas. But Rod Smith with Riverfront Investment Group says economies in Europe and even China are slowing down.
And you're going to have a third quarter without the benefit of tax rebates here in the U.S. So I think the third quarter is going to be where some of the reality hits.
And market analysts won't get much of a break. Some companies are already turning in their third quarter earnings. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
A couple of students in New York have stumbled onto a whale of a tale. The New York Times reports two high school students went around to grocery stores and restaurants doing DNA tests on seafood. They wanted to see if the fish was labeled correctly, if they were getting their money's worth. Turns out in a quarter of the cases, they weren't, in some cases by a long shot. One sushi sample was sold as luxury tuna. DNA tests showed it was actually tilapia from Mozambique. That's a fairly cheap fish often raised in a fish farm. Seems customers often fall for the cheaper fish. Hook, line, and sinker.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about business at Gather.com.
The party's over in Beijing after this weekend. The closing ceremonies for the Summer Olympics are Sunday night. We've done a lot of talking this week about how some gold medal winners are going to be coming home rich thanks to big money product endorsements. But consider the fact that there are really just a limited number of those lucrative deals to go around. Our Business of Sports commentator Diana Nyad has some thoughts about that. Good morning.
Hi, how are you, Bob?
Great, thanks. So we know what Michael Phelps is going to be doing. We know his future is assured.
Solid.
But, yes, exactly. So what about the also-rans, though? What about the Olympic athletes who didn't score as highly as he did? Where do they go from here?
Well, it's a good question. You know, we look at these 11,000 or so athletes over there, and are they going to make a living from what they've performed over there? Most no. There are a sort of lots of exhibition opportunities. You know, gymnasts, very much like ice skaters, you know, have an art that they perform. So there's no professional circuit, so to speak, but Madison Square Garden sets up the entire apparatus for gymnastics, and they can bring in 10,000 people who would love to see these gymnasts not compete, just fly around on the bars and fall off the balance beam.
And what about the athletes who've competed in past Olympics? Does their value go up around this time?
It goes up around this time. You'll see Dominique Dawes, the great gymnast from the 1996 Olympics, Janet Evans, who was one of our great swimmers for more than a decade. Their corporate sponsors make them come over and meet and greet. And, you know, people are thrilled to get in a tent and spend an evening with Dominique Dawes and have her sit side by side with them at the gymnastics competitions. So she becomes that star again.
Once it ends, does that leave you in the lurch from not only just a professional standpoint, from a personal standpoint?
Well, it does. I mean, you know, you and I have been talking about, you know, the big names, the people who have won gold and multiple gold in multiple Olympics. But what about the rower and the badminton player and the table tennis player? The most recent statistic I've seen is that 73% of Olympians in recent years enter very low-level jobs, very low-paying jobs. Their self-esteem was so high as an athlete, and then it becomes very low in the workplace when all their friends who have finished their masters and PhDs are working at the level that they would have been had they not been an athlete.
Well, if that's true, where's the Olympic Committee through all of this?
You know, the Olympic Committee just has never been focused on, you know, let's prepare for what's going to happen afterwards. They just have looked at it as, let's make our country. It's all about pride of country, not care for the individual. So I do think that it's something we got to look at down the road.
Well, it sounds to me like that could be maybe a business on its own, preparing these Olympic athletes for their future.
There you go. There you go.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
Our Business of Sports commentator, Diana Nyad. We welcome your thoughts at marketplace.org. Just click on the contact link. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. We appreciate you making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.